Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
A composite show. Archive segments from previous episodes that got cut due to time. Recorded for episode 229 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mean Team, Mad Jin, and Derek Paxton.
Dryer Lint compels you. That's actually a username, not some print statement.
The dryer keeps turning.
The power of dryer compels you? What?
I'm pretty sure the pun compels you, actually, but Dryer Lint may compel you as well. He says, I didn't know your advisors could do this, which is essentially you've started a game of Civilization V, you haven't founded a city yet, and you go talk to your advisors.
There's a picture in the thread, just for people to know.
Yeah.
Yes, there is a screenshot. Economic advisor's like, I think it would help our civilization if we found a city since we currently don't have one. My response to that is, you think?
Really?
You are fired, lady. Military advisor, found a city so we can start building more military units. Foreign, to begin diplomatic relations, we should probably found a city so other civilizations will know where to find us if they want to talk. Wow, that's pretty wordy. There's lots of qualifiers in there, but...
Yeah, it's sort of like... Hey, I don't know, maybe we could, whatever, don't have to.
But the science advisor wins, he's promoted actually. Can you please found a city so I can put my equipment down somewhere? My arms are killing me.
If you were carrying a whole library on your back, your arms would be killing you too.
And why is the science guy carrying everything?
Yeah, can't the military advisor shoulder some of that?
You think, since he has nothing better to do.
He's wearing all that armor though, I don't know. Oh, it's pretty,
he's
pretty
firmly grasping his spear. Armor.
No, that's sword he's got.
Recorded for episode 233 with Makalua, the Mean Team, Mad Jin, Alpha Shard, Fuzzy Fractal 42, and the Chris D.
The worst dick move.
Username is Decoran, and he's titled this as the Manila Incident. And he gives a pretty long diplomatic backstory on a four-player free-for-all and multiplayer and diplomatic posturing. But in a long story short, after essentially discouraging someone to attack him by posturing with another player, he noticed two of the guy's very best upgraded samurais in the water and decided to declare on them and insta-gib his super-promoted units. And it cost a good 30 turns of war and death of most of his troops, but it was a dick move that is not one to be forgotten. And so I believe the purpose of this is for us to also give some of the dick moves we've done in multiplayer games over time.
I felt like that reading that story, it seemed like the dick move was Japan bullying Greece's city-state and that he just merely was defending Greece, but that's my opinion.
That wasn't a dick move. That's just playing the game.
Yeah, and if you have an actual competition where you're fighting to beat each other at the game, you have to do some aggressive tactics at some stage.
Yeah, that's right. This is a four-player, no AI, so it's pretty much a free-for-all. You're expecting war, so it's all fair in love and war, as they say.
No, he was more suggesting that the fact that they were playing hybrid mode and he wasn't part of the war.
Right. My bad. Yeah. I completely forgot to mention that. Yeah, so he waited for the Japan player to end his turn with hybrid mode and then declared and killed those units while he couldn't react. That's right.
Right.
That's why it was like, a dick move.
Actually, it also looked like from reading it, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, but he was talking about how he could see the other player's screen and the fact that player had turned around to talk to a different player. So it sounded like, because he was playing a LAN game, not an online game, so they were able to physically touch each other.
It takes special courage to do moves like screen. This in a LAN game, for sure.
The thread goes into other people's dick moves, which tend to be much shorter to explain.
Sam's had a few over the years, for sure.
Yeah, but even funnier, this is like collectively. I mean, only one person actually literally did it, but the rest of us were kind of in on it, as in not telling him what happened.
That's true.
Honestly, Chris's move I don't think was as bad as certain other people's move.
Much worse has been done to Dan over the years.
But that one was just kind of surprising and rather racist.
But in previous Civs.
Yeah,
it might be the worst he's had in Civ 5. It's not nearly as bad as some of the things that were done to him in Civ 4. There's a reason we called declaring on Dan at the end pulling a rough eye. But even aside from that, MLS culture bombed him. Like, they each settled a city on an island towards the mid to late game. I think Dan actually settled two cities, and then MLS plopped the city between the two of them and culture bombed it before Dan could get any culture set up in either of the cities and flipped them both.
I think Phil has culture flipped one of my cities, but like, he was nice enough to give it back.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's just because I built Sistine Chapel, though. It's not like that time where...
Back when I built it the one time.
Okay. That was the most dick move thing I've ever done, got immortalized in Burncast, so... what's that? Yeah, you're building Sistine Chapel, you told us all. Oh, I have this handy little whip button right here.
Yeah. I trolled that one guy into declaring on me because he got killed by the AI, and so he switched to the AI that killed him, and then I was planning to take a city, and he refused to give it to me, and this is in Civ 4. So I started putting spies in that city and spreading culture over and over again until, like, I was just flooding it. And it would have eventually flipped to me. He put a lot of units there. And so because he put so many units there, I couldn't flip it. I just kept culture bombing it to piss him off. And then, like, when it was 80% Chinese, because I was playing as China, I'm like, hey, you know, this city is looking mighty Chinese. And, like, within 5 seconds, he declared on me. And what makes this a particularly bad dick move on my part, although it was somewhat of one on his, like, I basically over-dick moved him. As soon as he entered my territory, I realized that he didn't really understand collateral initiative and competitive MP in the game. Even though he was maybe 50% stronger than me, I said right then, I don't like kicking children, so if you don't want to die, I'll give you 5 minutes to change your mind, because otherwise you're off the map. And he got angry and refused, and probably about like 10, 20 turns later, he was off the map. So, yeah, he didn't play with us again after that. But that's my personal worst dick move, I think.
I think Chris now has to explain himself.
I was wondering when that was going to happen. So, standard turncast game as we are, waiting on the AI, and it comes to the usual break that Dan usually takes. He goes to the break, but he was preparing up. It was an East versus West map. I forget who was on the continent with him on the other side. They were preparing to take out the final AI on that, which was a pretty blobby Zulu at that point in time. So he went to the break, but we noticed that he actually pressed the end turn. He'd committed to the end of the turn. Not all of us had. And as we were kind of discussing, we were just talking over, you know, thinking, Jesus, Shaka hasn't really been all that aggressive this game sort of thing. And then we kind of thought, geez, what if we were to declare on Dan for sort of thing? Or what if we were to, like, bribe the AI to do things? So, you know, some of us actually, you know, looked around to see what AI we could bribe. And sure enough, I go to the Shaka and it's like, you know, so what would it take for you to declare on Dan? He's like, yeah, I'll do it for 2 iron and some gold. I was like,
he's a
okay. So I was like, okay. But the crucial part is that, because again, Dan had already committed the turn. He still wasn't there. Some of us hadn't ended the turn. But that was the thing. We all kind of got together and we were like, okay, let's just all end the turn, have the turn progress. Don't tell Dan he was bribed. Let's just make him think Shaka declared on him it was part of the AI's plan all along. Sure enough, we passed the turn. And then, what, 5, 10 minutes later, Dan goes back and he's like, what the? insert expletive here.
And I was on this call, and I just played along with everyone else, even though I wasn't actually playing Civ 5 at the time.
I wasn't in his game either, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, I'm going to have to go on mute.
Yeah. Wow. I actually started playing Brave New World again the next week.
Yeah. You were inspired by the trolling, is that it?
Yeah,
probably.
It was so inspirational, even Phil went back to Civ 5.
Yep.
That's probably the funniest part.
No, Dan's reaction was the best, especially when I think he was editing for Turncast later and he realized what happened.
The only worst thing I've done was take Victoria from him. I don't know if he still holds a grudge over that one. It's just Lake Victoria, just out in the open. It hadn't been settled yet near any city-states, but it was close enough for either me or Dan to take it, and So I took it, and I never really agreed to give it to him. I just, or, you know, allow him. I just was like, so I took it.
So I took it.
Was that back when Kaya and Monthar were playing with us on Turncast a lot? It ended up having some, a lot of fun stuff going on in there. Monthar had this habit of taking barb camps that you were using to, camping it for culture. And he'd done this a few times, and I'd yelled at him at least once during the Turncast episode. And then he did it again, so I just cranked up my military and just ran over him in a co-op-ish. Like, well, you know, you wanted the camp, but I want your city. It was already in my plan. It was an accident.
Yeah.
And the Mirizian elephants ran all over him.
I think that's fair. I mean, it's an escalation, but, you know. I mean, he's taken the barb camps already in a supposedly co-op game. And where do you draw the line? If he's going to draw the line one place, you can just draw it a little bit further to the other side, you know?
But further on the other side.
Pretty much anything Kaya does is dick move, isn't it?
Oh, Kaya definitely did.
Oh, no, Kaya wasn't that much of a dick move guy.
Really?
He did some stuff. I think we have some Turncast material.
No, we do.
Yeah.
I do remember the one time Monthar had rage quit, and before he quit, he gave it to his Priya.
Oh, wow.
He got that one to declare war on Dan, and then quit.
Even though we seem like great, nice people when you listen to us, we can all be dicks.
Yep.
Oh, I forgot about the one I did to Stuart, too. That was...
Oh, my God, Stuart.
He was being annoying for some reason. I forget why, in-game. Again, this was Civ 4. I took a good 15, 20 spies and put them in his capital. First, I destroyed buildings, and I used that to destroy all of his health-generating buildings, including his greenery. Then I poisoned his water supply, so he had, like, negative 20 health, so he's losing, like, 15 food a turn. And then I destroyed all of his happiness buildings and fomented unhappiness in that city. None of his citizens were willing to work tiles, so he had, like, negative 30 food. And because of the unhealth, he had terrible food income and couldn't do anything about it. I shrunk his capital to, like, 3 pop from, like, 18 pop or something. It was really bad. That was kind of mean.
Did he know that it was you that was doing that? Or?
Yes, because if you're spamming spies, eventually some of them are going to get caught, even if they're way up in espionage. Yeah. So it's like, and like an ex-spy has been caught doing this.
Right. It's
like, what am I going to say? The other ones weren't me.
it's just a happy coincidence that you've had this many spies attempting to
make
it. I was just
trying to counter the other spies that are poisoning your water as I failed to destroy your building. I mean,
I'm trying to counter the other spies poisoning the water by putting my poison in instead.
I was free.
Yeah, I remember in that game, I think somebody had kept switching my civics to serfdom, and I couldn't get out of
it. That's what he did that annoyed me. I don't remember exactly. I don't think he did it to me directly, but maybe. If he did it to me directly, I definitely would have hosed him like that, and I would have switched to my civics, too. But I don't recall that aspect, so I'm not going to say that's what happened. The one where I made Lord Park and died of barbarians.
Oh, my God!
Wow.
I left his city with, like, one badly damaged unit, and the barbarian came in and killed him. I hit end turn. I think he remembered that, because he paid me back for it later. Although we had a fun rivalry going in the Civ 4 days, he and I. Because, like, he was a better single player by a decent margin, but in our MP games, it was very split between him and me.
Episode 238 with Dan Q, the Mian team, Mad Jin, and Stormtrooper 412.
Civ 5, our battleships OP.
Nope.
Yes.
Nope.
I'd like to point out when Gods and Kings came out, they really, really, really were overpowered. And then that changed. So I don't think they are overpowered, keeping in mind that they have three range, indirect fire, pretty solid damage output, and they're fast, of course, because all naval units are really, really fast for some strange reason.
Yep, 5 movement.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you get them up to range logistics, then yeah, you've got a navy that can just wander around slaughtering pretty much everything against the AI, because derp-de-derp-de-derp, the only reason
Navy's ROP is, well, AI takes all its moves at the same time, so it calculates them all, and it doesn't calculate when people are near or stop and go, ooh, I found a unit, maybe I should do something. No, it just calculates it all the time. So AI is fundamentally broken and can't use ranged units effectively, especially naval, because you have movement and then range, unlike the human. So yes, versus the AI, pretty much anything. Throwing a rock is overpowered versus the AI, but still.
Scales a little on difficulty level, but still.
Yeah, but basically, are they more overpowered as a unit than other units near them? No. They don't see subs, although many people don't build subs because they don't like subs. Again, balance talk. You kind of have to remember that you do need to be able to build these other things, rather than discount them anyways. But yeah, subs can wreck battleships easily because they can't be seen by battleships. Destroyers can see them, but...
You can't, though. They're a resource-locked unit. You have a finite quantity of them that you can build in the first place. They're accessible to everybody, and there are units near them that give them real problems, especially in numbers.
Yep.
You know, he talks about the aircraft carriers being fragile and planes taking damage. Okay, yes, you're not supposed to tank hits with your aircraft carriers. That's obvious. But if,
well,
on the other hand,
the one promotion side.
Yeah, I mean, they're not like...
like the one line of promotion, you can sort of.
Well, yeah, but you can also put more planes on and paying attention to your naval site, you can hit battleships with the planes on the aircraft carrier from outside the range of the battleships and soften them up very badly. Not only that, but the sure, they outrange cities, but if you're attacking cities with planes, then they can just dwell on your battleships that way too. And there could be a lot of planes in that city, potentially, that can just rebase there from almost anywhere. Whereas the number of battleships you can put on the front of the city is often limited either by your resources or terrain. It's not something that's just obvious that you're going to blow all your oil into that.
Yeah, if you're on a water map,
might be
you're going to blow a lot of it.
Oh, sure. If you're on a water map, yeah, you might put all your oil into that. But it's not in every game.
Not all.
And it's certainly, well, if you're playing the AI, you might put all your oil into it. Because let's be honest here, you just want to run around and take all the shitties straight away. and the AI is not going to build planes on you that quickly that you can't handle.
Well, flight comes first. And Great War Bombers.
Not finding the AI too good at this, but...
No. My point is, like, if you want to counter battleships, and there is a promotion line for air units that is anti-naval. Even though they actually do start with a penalty versus anti-naval, for some strange reason, but there is a promotion line that wipes that out.
I would imagine it's pretty hard for not specific aircraft to target naval units in reality as well. That's not something I've looked into, but carpet bombing the water just doesn't seem very efficient. You would need something that's designed to hit a target specifically.
No, there was, especially during the Cold War, so we're talking like actual bombers. Russia had mass bomber fleet that was loaded out with a lot of torpedoes and other such things.
Oh, there you go.
Weren't just carpet bombing, but...
Those guys must have had the promotion.
Yeah, they had masses of torpedoes.
There is one more thing. Battleships upgrade from frigates, and if you have all sorts of promotion buildings in the city that's making frigates, you can stack enough experience points to have your frigates start with range before they even engage an enemy. So, once you stack enough frigates with range, then that range carries over once you upgrade them all to battleships. It's a costly process, but it makes your battleships even better.
Although, you relative really... to the era, you could make a strong case that such frigates are probably stronger relative to the era than the battleships are to theirs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So actually, frigates
are harder to deal with
range
3 frigates than range 4 battleships by a margin, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, and another point is that range 3 frigates will probably be enough to capture most of the map anyway. So, battleships in that case become just a bit of an insurance policy if a few cities are a bit too hard to capture using your frigates.
You could also just defend it, just mass spam subs, slaughter everything. Privateers, you have an issue, because they're mostly going to die, because it's combat strength based. But yeah, I mean, battleships, no anti-air whatsoever, so they get slaughtered.
Yeah, I had that happen to me in more than one occasion.
Yeah, so if you find yourself on the receiving end of a lot of battleships, if they're coming to you at land, then yeah, air units. But if you're like, oh, my air units can't reach out to where they're being a problem, and they're squishing all my naval units, then yeah, as has been mentioned, submarines, nuclear submarines, and get them in packs. Get the wolf pack promotion.
Yep.
Oh, there you go.
And then they really go squish.
We didn't mention that counter, but yeah, if you got a stack of battleships nearby, just nuke them.
Yeah, you can always just nuke them. Missiles, subs with wolf pack, mass promote. Yeah, that can basically just one-shot the battleship. Bye!
That's my preference to missiles. I'm supposed to be a missile cruiser.
I was attacked a few times by an AI with frigates and privateers. They all got killed mysteriously by some unknown force. It was actually many of my hidden submarines, which they made really, really short work of them. So I imagine the similar would happen to not only frigates, but every other ship that's left exposed to the might of submarines.
Yep. I know, they can be blocked. And the other thing is destroyers. If people talk about, like, oh, I got battleship and destroyers. Destroyers are off in the far, 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 far away side of the tech tree over with tanks. You know, that place you never go unless you're trying to get a science victory, and then it's the last place you ever go on the way to the science victory.
Or if you're playing Germany, you know.
Yeah,
good.
Well.
Or you're running autocracy and stealing from the AI, which they like that path a bit.
Yep, but defense. I mean, granted, the sub defense only works if no one ever stops and goes, hey, look, there's a sub. And you showed up right next to it.
In other words, it's great against the AI.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even though they're a bit of glass cannon subs themselves.
Well, yeah, of course they are.
Not so good against destroyers that walk into them, no.
And that's kind of really.
Yeah.
Subs are great as long as you don't know they're there.
Yeah.
But as soon as you do, they can just get splattered. Some dude asked whether there was a point in making missile cruisers. Basically, they show up at the end of the game, usually after the game is already effectively won. They do, quote-unquote, practically the same damage as battleships, which is not even close to true. They also act as carriers, but only for missiles, but that does include the nuclear variety, so that's always nice. But of course, if you have nuclear subs, of course you're going to go nuclear missiles on the nuclear subs, and not, of course, nuclear missiles on the carrier or nuclear missiles on the missile cruiser. Ha ha ha. Also, missile cruisers are way faster than nuclear subs, so, eh. Anyways, the most this person's ever gotten out of them was doing 5 to 8 more damage to a city or unit compared to the battleship, and they absolutely wrecked his gold per turn. Okay. So is there a point to having missile cruisers?
As opposed to, like, tactical nukes in XCOM? Probably not, but...
Well, if you have tactical nukes in XCOM,
They're into war in the endgame, or whatever.
Yeah. First of all, unlike the battleship, missile cruiser has anti-aircraft built in, it also has anti-sub built in, it can carry nukes, and it has a base 100 damage for range strength versus the battleship's 65-ish.
I don't think this bit here that he mentioned that they cost twice as much to maintain, I think that's not true.
That's not true.
No. Yeah, they all cost the same amount to maintain.
Many people actually mentioned that. Now, granted, the longer you're in the game, i.e. turn number, the higher the maintenance cost for units. So it could have been that he thought his unit maintenance back when he was playing with battleships was lower than it was when he was playing with missile cruisers, which is technically true, just not directly related to the difference between the two.
He was in a different era then.
Probably.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think the games when I actually built missile cruisers, and I think there was only one game in which I built missile cruisers, and that was because an AI, which I wanted to nuke, was too far away for me to reach conventionally. So I used the missile cruiser as a proxy to get his nuke towards him. It was fun. I won the next turn anyway.
Yeah, basically, the missile cruiser is the battleship and the destroyer merged into one, except ranged, and with nukes. I mean, it is the end game unit, just like the GDR. It's there if you really get to the end of the tech tree and still haven't bothered to win.
Yeah. So yeah, in most games, it's not going to have much point, but you can build it and use it.
Massive beaker bubble, if you want, for great scientists and free techs and research agreements, and just, like, hit missile cruisers at the same time everybody else is hitting battleships, just for giggles.
Yeah, you could. It seems so lackluster compared to other options, just, like, nuking everybody into the Stone Age. Like, if you're going to get that kind of tech lead, sure, I guess. You can use any endgame unit that's an era in front of everybody else's and just mop up the AI. It doesn't really matter which one you choose.
Yeah, like Stormtrooper, I very rarely make missile cruisers, but yes, there is a point, and that's been established. It's towards the end of the game, you need something on balance to try to give you that extra push. It's kind of like XCOM squads, or as Matt mentioned, giant death robots. Colonius comment, the only con of missile cruisers is that they look very ugly when compared to battleships, which scores a lot of style points. Well, then, we can't have ugly units on the map, I tell you what.
Fashion, too.
Yep. I think it's a bit unfair to compare them to XCOM squads, because XCOM squads are primary unit to be used in late-game domination. Because what they do is just basically drop them around any capital and just take it in two turns. Repeat it six times, or maybe do it six times simultaneously, and you just won the domination victory instantly.
Yeah, mass nuke, drop, then follow up with XCOM drops.
But bear in mind, you don't even need nukes for that.
Yeah, it depends on, it just depends on the city's defense number.
And whether or not you have a visual on the cities, because that can be a pain. Often I need to take over useless cities just so I can get visual on the city I want to take.
Recorded for episode 241, Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Majin, and Sedwick.
Our covert op mission's a little too strong. So he was playing Ark in Yonder Femella, and he went for a domination victory. He sustained a huge army and was losing more than 60 energy per turn, but he just basically kept stealing energy. And he had 9 agents stealing energy. So he had tons of energy, so he really wasn't losing per turn, but whatever. And then he got the virtue to cut army costs, and then he was running positive, but then he was able to actually buy units with all the money he was stealing. So to me, I mean, first thought, if you were losing money and then you took the virtue that cut army costs and you started gaining a huge amount, apparently a 210 energy per turn flip, isn't that the question you should be asking if that's too strong or not? Not all this extra energy. Anyways, I think stealing energy was huge because, you know, he was able to steal lots and lots and spend it on units. So he thought it was a little strong. Now, granted, if you're still stealing energy near the end of the game, you're either doing it on purpose for a very specific thing, or you're doing it wrong. Because seriously, you could have used Ark and stole all the science and tech to get to the end of the game.
Or flip defeat really, cities.
Or flip cities, or...
Both.
Lots. He didn't mention Rising Tide or Mela. He did not mention it in the original post. So people started asking about that. He's like, why are you having energy problems? There's no energy problems in Rising Tide. Because there's not, because there's all these stuff to get more money. And then he fesses up that he doesn't actually have Rising Tide yet. So, comparatively, is Vanilla Covert Ops strong? Or is Rising Tide Covert Ops strong?
Yes.
I would suggest that Ark in Rising Tide would make Ark in Vanilla look like they didn't even have covert ops.
Oh yeah, no, it's covert ops is stronger now. Not just if you are Ark, but that's kind of the poster child for the strength of covert ops.
Yeah, well, I mean, when you're on quick speed and you can get it down to 2 turns per...
Yes, between their inherent trait and then the additional traits you can get and then artifact decisions and quests and it's just like, yeah, it's just multiple upon multiple upon multiple.
Yep. And the funny thing is, if you're not Ark, or and Ark's not in the game, then covert ops really isn't going to feel that strong because they increased the amount of turns per covert op as a base. So each specific one has a different number as a turn base. But then they use percentiles to reduce those, which on quick speed makes it get really far down there real quick.
Not as far down as you could see quirkiness in Espionage and Civilization 5, fortunately, but only 1,300 turns to do something. Oh.
No, no, this is, hey, look, it's 2 turns. Boom. Hey, look, I can call down Colossi every 2 turns. Ooh. Have fun with that. So I would say Ark and Covert Ops in the Rising Tide is a little bit stronger. Way stronger. But anyways, is it strong? I don't know. You can do a lot of crazy stuff, especially if you're Ark, blah, blah, blah. But in the similar amount of time, as long as you're not trying to steal the entire tech tree, which is plausible.
He used a tech tree.
Yeah, you could do other stuff.
Yes, and if you're trying to get the entire tech web in Civilization Beyond Earth, what are you doing? Why are you doing this?
I don't know. I was able to do it with ARK before an AI was able to even consider their victory.
Well, it's kind of incidental, but I mean, if your goal is that I need to, well, you don't need to. I mean, you might be able to, like you said, or you can. But it's not like the tech tree where it's like, okay, I need to get most of this, and I need to go here and here and here. It's like...
No, I just don't need any of that.
At some point, it's like, I've got enough science, I've got forward momentum on my side, let's start stealing some energy. That's what I love to do in covert ops, especially as ARK, but not just as that. It's like, oh, am I, quote-unquote, only getting, you know, 50, 75, 100, 125 energy a turn? Oh, every 5 or 6 turns, I get the equivalent of 10 or 12 turns of additional energy, which I then can use to buy anything I want, essentially, that I can otherwise construct. Whether it's units, whether it's buildings, it's absolutely wonderful. Now, phrases it is, does covert ops seem a little strong to anyone? It can be. He didn't actually phrase it, does covert ops seem too strong? Which, of course, this is all subjective. I actually kind of found it interesting he phrased it that way.
Well, seem a little strong. So he's not saying that it's like, oh my God, this is broken.
Yeah, no. There is some ridiculousness, but some would say systemic.
Yeah, yeah.
With the exception of perhaps ARK is like a very repeatable, oh no, not again. But short of that.
It's again implementation. I mean, since they use percentiles, makes balancing everything really hard.
Yeah.
Because the bigger the number you put in, the bigger that percent actually does. If, say, you made the base coup up at 50 for everybody, well, ARK's got it to 25. And then you'd add another 25% on that, now you're down to 12.5. And then you add the other trait and take off another 35%, whatever. You're down to like 7 turns with ARK. Everybody else is at 50 without actually having bonuses. So you can do it in 7 turns, and everybody else doesn't even believe it exists.
They don't stack the modifiers additively, do they? It's not really like you just get a 50 and 25% and you get 75%, really?
Yes.
Well, there is some yes and no to that. The 50% is real additive. But then it starts getting potentially multiplicative after that. There's, I think the hard limit is about 36 to 38%. That's the smallest, the actual hard limit on it. But 36% of something can equal 2 at some point because, well, percentile math on low integer numbers. So if they had switched it to, say, this removes X number of turns, then they can actually give ARK a speed bonus without also finding ways to like make it broken. And then
although
they can
that adds incentive to the lower tier missions because you can get a larger percentage reduction on the lower missions as a result of that change. And then you're stealing energy every turn or something.
And a greater likelihood that you'll be successful.
Yeah, and the energy per turn theft is actually slower than science per turn.
Well, okay, then you can steal science every turn, whatever. You get my point. If you try to tune it by turns and leave it even remotely comparably strong, then you're going to be stealing stuff like every turn because you're just going to stack all those instead.
Yeah, there's literally no reason to try and steal a tech invert because you could just have your spies steal science instead.
Yeah, and you can keep doing that when you're ahead of them, which is in contrast with stealing technology.
So, yeah, there's things that they should do to balance things out, and I think they should get away from percentile reductions and just flip it to, okay, these will take, say, 15 turns, and ARK gets 5 turns off at most, and then, you know, reduce a couple turns. Doesn't matter if it's quick speed or marathon or whatever. You can keep the floor to a point where it's not going to be brutally long for everybody who's not ARK, and it's not going to be hyper-fast for ARK. And actually do some balance in that way.
As Adam Smith says, screw you.
I was wondering who was going to rage first, Matt, your man.
Apparently, Matt is foaming at the mouth at this point.
Well, if they'd given him more than one line of dialogue in vanilla, you know.
Good news, everybody. You no longer need to play with ARK in your game because there's enough other people.
And the buzzing mentions in the chat about the Chengsu, of course, one of the new 4 factions that is introduced in Rising Tide. And I love a couple of threads where I've seen it's like, oh, the Chengsu suck compared to ARK when it comes to covert ops. And it's like, well, I think that's the faction other than ARK is not as good as ARK when it comes to covert ops. It's full stop. That's not anything against the Chengsu.
No, they have two extra So if you want to do math, if Ark has five people stealing tech every, say, four turns on standard speed, and Chungsu has six people stealing tech at, I don't know, whatever, 10 or 15 turns, who steals more?
Plus the fact that the Chungsu can start stealing earlier.
Well, it's so freaking slow before you start getting the bonuses that they don't really get that much of a head start. I mean, also you have to keep in mind that there is a percentage that they'll lose or that you'll die, which also means the Chungsu has more people making the attempts, so they're more likely to get more successes, just that Ark does it faster with less people. There is a theoretical way to model it to find out who actually can steal more and if two extra people is sufficient to balance that.
I guess the time when covert ops will seem too overpowered is if the other factions on the planet are actively involved in that, and you're not. In which case, you done goofed.
Yeah, if you never build your spy agency, yeah, that might be a problem.
Our farm's too strong. Not just a little strong, but our farm's too strong outright.
Ooh,
by
too strong.
Reek 483. Feels like there's only a few exceptions when it comes to determining what improvements to use. Mines where you can, strategic resources where you can, otherwise farms. Late game improvements seem completely outclassed compared to all the bonuses you can stack on a farm. I'm not sure I agree with that, but okay. And they are good. You're going the right stuff for them, but sometimes you don't want
to. Also, did you really bother to go to the text that give the boost to farms?
Yeah.
Really? You went that way? Dead zone of no affinity?
I guess to me it's also a question of when.
Yeah, that too.
Did you go to do such things, and why did you do it as well? It's like, well, I'm stuck around here, and I got lots of land. Oh, look at all that tundra. And well, maybe a little later that'll be better, because then maybe there's actually an advantage, because then I can actually grow the city, so then I can actually work some of these resources, so that would be helpful. But, yeah, are farms too strong? No. Are they strong? Yes.
Well, somewhere along the way, somebody starts talking about trade routes. I'm like, okay, food's a good yield, yes. But if you have trade routes, you can set it up properly. Why do empires grow without bothering with farms? So, take that.
Yeah, I was under the impression that spamming different improvements was considered a bit stronger. I don't have Rising Tide yet, so I could...
People in Vanilla were all about get their academies as quickly as possible and spam those. But now they take, like, minimum 20 turns or something like that, because they also increase the time it takes to build an improvement. Of course, for that, you just spam out crazy number of workers because you can get them for free with a service.
Mm-hmm.
So you can spam
out
more.
If energy isn't a problem, that's not actually too big of a constraint, other than micromanagement and unit blocking each other.
But, of course, you can always just get the drone sphere and cut that in half. And then add up other percentile reductions on top of that. And then all of a sudden, it's still not really a problem.
No, and then there's also these things called internal trade routes.
Yeah.
Which you can also get a...
But you do need a city, at the very least, that produces a lot of food. Otherwise, it doesn't propagate.
Yeah.
You do. And then if you've got a decent network potential for that, then there is the traits you can take. It must be under domestic, where you can increase the yields of that. I think it starts at 30, then goes to 45, and then 60 or something like that. So it is possible that you could be like, this trade route is going to send 7, 8, 9, 10. I've even seen it as high as 12 food a turn. That is also quite strong. Is it too strong? No. As Magin's getting at, you're not going to be able to do that with every single possible trade route, because you've got to have that differential. You've got to have at least one city that is producing a decent amount of food, which farms tie to in order to be able to do that. But maybe at times you might be like, you know what? I would actually rather a biowell here, because that will give me a health benefit for the city as well, which then will allow it to grow even more and for me to have even more cities. Or maybe I want to terrascape this place and go down the virtue, whatever one that is, towards the end there in prosperity, where it's going to give you plus one, so then your terrascapes now get you what? Also like three food?
Three food.
When you get to the bottom, yeah. Then it makes terrascapes. Nice.
333. But why did you bother going to that tech in the first place? No one goes to that tech. Not even purity people.
Which tech are you talking about?
The one that gives you floatstone.
Maybe they're stealing science every turn.
Yeah, or something. I just hate the cost of that tech, because it's in the second ring, give or take, and it's relatively a basic tech, but it's extra expensive for giggles, apparently.
Well, I guess it also ties to the part of the land that you've got, what you want to be able to do. while you would want to go to vertical farming, for example. I think someone suggested that, you know, the increased food that you get from vertical farming, that should be cut down so it's not caught as much.
But
okay, yeah, you could do that, but I don't see the point because, as we've already said, it's kind of out of the way of affinity.
A farm gives you one food. That gives you two food in total. Two whole food! Really. And yeah, I think the problem when people are talking about, oh, farms give you all these things. Yes, you need to go to the tech that gives you the plus one food, plus one energy. And then you need to go to the outer ring tech that gives you the plus one production. And then you need to go all the way over to Harmony end game to get the plus one science. That's a lot of tech for one improvement. Or you could have just built some of the other improvements.
Yeah, if you want plus one science, find yourself some silica and put a mine on it and then work it. There you go. Right from the beginning of the game.
You're just specialist.
There's that.
Or built an array.
Or that too.
We have a couple of threads about artifact combos. One started by Promethean, who says, let's start compiling the artifact combos so we can perhaps determine when it's best to do a three combo or to hold on to them. And they ask for the name of the artifact, its origin, be it Old Earth, Alien, or Progenitor, its quality, and the resource it gives when converted solo. Then you add your results below, and if you get the same end reward, please use a different name, origin, quality, resource artifacts, and the amount of resources in the final combo so we can figure out what decides the end reward.
Combining three artifacts will give you the ability to get a bonus or a wonder. But that is regardless of the quality of the artifacts. If you have three of the same type, so three Old Earth ones, you will get something. It doesn't matter if they're broken or if they're pristine.
Yep, that has absolutely no effect whatsoever. It's just a text flavor, graphical flavor. The end.
Yeah, when you actually put three together, you actually get a much reduced output from the three artifacts because you're getting the bonus.
You're taking a single one and it's battered and you want that like plus 20 science or plus whatever production that it would give you individually. Yeah. Quality doesn't matter?
Quality matters on that.
Okay, so there we go.
A battered artifact will give you really crappy output, maybe 8. I think you've seen 6 or some really crappy amount. Whereas the pristine one will give you like pristine Old Earth relic and sometimes give you say 96 culture versus say 20. So you really have to differentiate between using pristine, okay, or crap ones for individual rewards versus the what it actually takes to get these. It's always going to give you the exact same thing. It doesn't really matter if it's good or bad. So
pile in my three crap ones to make the Tesseract targeting.
Yeah, that's a better choice. If you have three crappy ones, use those. And then burn the pristine one for the yield.
Yeah, later in the thread, MNF says, the simplest rules are, if you want an Old Earth, if you want Alien, if you want a Progenitor reward, try all the combinations of artifacts with the same category as the reward you want. If you want hybrid rewards, it's a hybrid category, it's no artifacts, only rewards. Try all the combinations that uses artifacts from at least two different categories. After you have tried all combinations and the reward you want didn't show, bad luck, try again once you get another artifact that you can use in the previous two rules. So the thread itself goes into, again, all of these combinations of what you can get and what the total output is. For myself, I am almost always wanting to wait for that three combination. Now, that doesn't mean that, I'm going to wait till I get three things in order to test. No, I'm going to be looking at, as was said, individually, the quality is key, but I'm also looking at what my current output is, what point it is in the game. Is it worthwhile to do one or even two? Because there are certain things in combination of threes that just make you smile, that you say, if only I combined these two things 15 turns ago before I got this third artifact, then I would be farther ahead if I had done that rather than waiting. Whereas sometimes, especially when it's something that you get instantly, it's not wonder unlocked, it's not building unlocked, it's instant reward, like, 25% covert op speed increase, for example. Those kind of things just make you go, wow, that was worth waiting for. But there is some randomness, there is some kind of luck skill in there, as has been pointed out by MNF. And this is an individual, and a couple of other people did as well. They started going into the Lua. They started looking at the code, trying to parse what this means to give some general recommendations.
And as a matter of fact, we don't often talk about mods, but he has published an artifact helper that is going to help you, and he's updated it to already to reflect the latest patch, determine if this is going to get you what it is that you want.
Yeah, there is a little bit in there about the quality versus what you actually get out of it. I don't know, Akin was actually talking about this, and I think I actually remember this from before, but in the XML, there is some preferences based on the type of artifact you have to give a certain buff. If you have two different artifacts that are trying to force one way or another, and then the quality might be a coin flip.
And the coin flip might be referred to this other thread by Captain Patch, who asks, are the expedition artifacts a random number generator die roll result? That is, does the program 1 complete the expedition and then 2 do a die roll then? Or are the artifacts kind of scripted, like this one appears after the 5th expedition, this one after the 9th, etc.?
I'm reasonably certain it actually does the RNG each time, not after 5th or 9th. Because every time that you do an expedition, there is a percent chance to get an artifact. Every time you get an artifact, that percent chance goes down for the next one. Basically, you're supposed to slowly but surely get less and less if you keep getting them. And apparently, in theory, if you don't get one, but there are some left, then the percentages go back up. So if you miss a bunch, you eventually might get another one back.
Eventually, you get all the history dug up.
Yeah. And then you're screwed after that. Usually you see this if you're very aggressive against alien nests. You will inevitably get all the artifacts from alien nests really quickly and then get nothing for the rest of the game.
A couple of other points that came up about it. First off, once you get a particular reward, hey, I got 25% covert speed. I'm going to see if I can get that again to get to 50.
No.
No, you will only get that one time per game. Fortunately, that's not something that has to be patched after the fact. Woo! And the order of the combination. So if you're doing 2 or 3, it does not matter. Quoting from MNF, quote, because the possible reward list is sorted each time before taking the random number. So the order does not matter, and I'm thinking, okay, I tried that myself. I thought, I wonder if the order will make a difference. Either it's going to give me something different, or maybe the yields will be better, but no, that actually does nothing. Presently.
Wait for it.
Now, in terms of what you can get in terms of rewards, everyone loves, in addition for myself, if I was going to do, like, I'm not going to do a top 10, but like a top 2 or 3 after covert ops, faster expedition speed is also very nice, 100%. Thank you very much. I will take that. The plus 50% worker build speed, I mean, it's not as good as the other two, but it's helpful depending upon the point in the game, the number of workers that you have. Maybe you can't get that agreement that's going to get you your workers for free. Under the open mic, email from Grizzly Gris.
We have an email account?
Surprisingly, we don't get a bunch of hate mail.
And with that...
It all goes to Dan, as we've instructed people routinely to send all hate mail to Dan.
He says, hello, guys. Thank you for your dedication on this podcast year after year in the quest for the ultimate min-max game. Very informative. Love your regular panel and the recurring guests.
Aw.
Rising Tide is all out. Well, I don't know if it's all out yet because there's going to be at least another patch because Frax said there would be patches and we've only had one, so that's singular, not plural, but I know what he means. Lots of questions and strategy to discuss. Question the first. What do you think of this strategy spamming lots of explorers early in order to feed on pods and excavations to compensate other builds in order to cut off other players from exploring them? I think you might be referring to this in part unlockable. If you have starships, or you go in and edit a text file in XML, that reveals expedition sites on the map, so then you can just say, explorers, go here. It is something you can do. It's a tactic. It's a smart one. It's not maybe as smart as it sounds on the face of it, because it's not your explorers are going to be able to go to this one and that one and that one and get this and that in the expeditions. I know he's talking about pods as well, which of course are not revealed. Wait for that in a future patch. But in terms of it being a strategy, it's questionable.
What are you talking about? Hyper-spam of explorers, especially when you can get the explorers plus 3 excavations, is the strategy at the moment.
It is very strong, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that depending upon the type of map that you're on and your relationship with the aliens, they might be getting squished, and so maybe you need to be escorting them or being a little more selective in terms of where you're sending them. It's like, okay, let's clear this territory so the explorer can move in, etc. But what do we think of it? Yeah, it should be used.
What Dan is saying, Madjin, is that he's going to attack your explorers. So you need to plan for that and attack Dan.
Pretty much. I guess it's the question of, is this in single player? Then, yes, spam explorers and go steal all the stuff. Because, I mean, seriously, a single artifact, if you luck into an artifact on turn, say, 10, because you actually have to dig it up first, that gives you 96 culture, because it's a nice, pristine, old earth artifact. You would do well to burn that as fast as possible, because that's, well, at least 30-plus turns worth of normal culture generation. And it gives you a bunch of virtues, at least two at that point.
Yes, absolute value benefits, better earlier on. Yep.
Absolutely, go get it all. Or you can keep it for the big, you know, attempts on the bigger stuff, whatever. Getting it all before the AI gets it, absolutely. Now, if this is in multiplayer, I would still do it, because there's always going to be other players who would want to spam explorers as well, and then you want to get your fair share of it. But do we want to compensate other people? Possible. If this is multiplayer FFA, you spam explorers, I spam subs, you're on the coast, I win.
Yeah.
So pay more attention to, not necessarily if it's a game theory. If everybody's doing X strategy and somebody does Y, if Y wrecks X, because you're the only one doing it, then yes, there is other ways to do things.
Yes, military units tend to beat explorers in a one-on-one battle.
And we don't have, like, the AI, for example, saying, hey, can you stop going to these sites that are near my territory? Although we had that at some point, but we don't anymore.
Yeah, it disappeared.
I mean, hell, you get in a cooperative situation, you can go into their territory and explore sites in their freaking territory, and they still don't get pissed off, but they will get pissed off if you don't know how to improve your land.
Yep.
I was surprised because, you know, in Civ 5 we have the archaeological sites, and if you go near an enemy's territory, certain things up, they're going to go, hey, stop that. But in this, nope.
Hey, you don't have a lot of energy banks. You suck. Actually, I'm spending the energy on measures to kill you, so... Wrong. What?
I know how to play this game. It's not called Save All My Energy.
No, they're just being salty before they die.
Yeah.
One last jab in as they're getting removed from the game.
And then I guess question the second, do you think trades stop when the Sea City moves?
Do I think it stops? No. Pretty sure it doesn't. That would really suck.
It could either be really bad, it's like broken, or it could just be just trolley, which is, hey, this city moved, so reestablish the trade route. Hey, this city moved, reestablish.
Yeah, that would be bad.
We don't need that micro. No,
enough of that kind of micro, thank you.
That'd be very detracting. Thank you for giving them the idea, Grizz. I guess that'll be in the next patch. Crap.
Yeah, Candle's got to know where to go.
I went to that hex, and it's just a bunch of water now. There's nobody there. Did you look to the left? Oh, there it is.
There's a sign and everything.
Yeah, we went this way.
We went that way.
We learned how to leave Earth, but...
Recorded for episode 242 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Matt Jin, and Drew Sane.
Do you miss having the year up in the corner? You know, the Beyond Earth has it as turn 157. I'm actually fine because then I can say the turn is any length of time I want. It doesn't seem so weird to, it takes years to move X and Y. You know, somebody put the example further down in the thread. It took you 30 years to clear this forest. You're fired.
It doesn't take 2,000 years to clear a forest in, you know, ancient era. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
When I was first learning Civ 4 and I was, like, looking at those succession game threads and trying to glean how to play, like, I was used to thinking in terms of the date, like, you know, 3000 BC or 1 AD or 500 AD, and they're discussing everything in turns because it's more useful, especially if you're varying between speeds. And that threw me so much, but now, like, I can't think in terms of the dates any longer. Turns are just more useful information, and to say if I'm sorry. I know there's an immersion aspect there for some people, but the turns are better. Like, turn 115 being 1 AD in Civ 4 Standard is just something you got used to.
I mean,
it actually helps my immersion for it to just be a turn, because then I can say it's however long I want.
Yeah, and when we talk about things in Civ, we're not saying, let's increase the worker's speed by X number of years. It's a percentage, and then that translates into turns. Oh, hey, I can chop this down in 6 turns instead of 8. What turn are you on right now? Oh, well, I'm on this turn, as opposed to this year. So
yeah.
I guess I noticed that it wasn't there, but I went, Okay.
I mean, when I look at this question, I feel that the question is really, would the game be more immersive if you add the years? And I would say no. Civ 5, for example, is arguably about creating a civilization that stands the test of time. So using years does denote a Civ's progress, and that makes sense. But Beyond Earth's story is many things, but I would argue that it's not really about standing the test of time, so why would you have years in there? And even then, would it be years or perhaps months or days, considering this is a society that can make magical planetary portals? So I think it's better that they didn't really nail down a specific hard time. And also, most planets don't have 365 days in a year, so it'd be really weird off the bat unless you were to continue using the Earth calendar. Purity might keep with the Earth calendar, but I think that Supremacy and Harmony would actually ditch the Earth calendar by turn 100 or something.
The movement scale has always been an issue in Civ because you have so much time progressing.
I agree. In Beyond Earth, not having the year makes sense.
Yeah.
In Civilization V, I understand why it's there, but at the same time, to your point, Brian, about why we necessarily a year being 365 days, how do we know in Civilization V that a year was necessarily 365 days? Because we're not playing on Earth,
mm-hmm.
unless it's, you know, actually Earth.
Conspiracy.
And who's to say that not only is a year 365 days, but who's to say a month is necessarily 30 or 31 days, or a day is 24 hours? So that is our bias that we are projecting onto civilization, and we should feel shame. Yep, there we go.
Oh, you should anyways.
Planet shaming.
Video about what can be done about Gandhi in his warmongering ways, and the obvious answer is nothing, because his words are backed by nuclear weapons.
Wow. All our problems are solved. Thanks, Venice.
Look, all I'm saying is if we need money, I got it covered. So just ask.
Yeah, and if we need any cities, don't, because you only have one.
Huh. I mean, the joke was that Venice can only build one city, but you can also just chew on other people's cities by force. You know?
Yeah, but these are more AI.
I know.
That's not going to happen, like, ever.
And then, sure enough, he turns around and drops a nuke on Venice.
Oh, crap. Yeah. Well, we'll probably bounce back. I think I have enough money to fix it. So.
It looks like Gandhi took out all the trade routes in the world simultaneously.
Oh, then all my money's gone. Well, I'm out. Sorry, guys.
No one will miss you.
Oh,
yeah. I have nothing to worry about. India loves some Byzantine culture, so I'll be fine. Congratulations on being killed last.
I also like that there's constant denouncing, by the way, throughout the video. Times that make no sense, but of course, that really sounds like Civ. Honestly, more than anything else.
Well, that's like Turncast.
Yeah.
For sure.
Denounce, 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 denounce.
I, for one, am going to send my entire beautiful navy to their certain doom. Ramses, what about you?
I'll stop building wonders.
Focus on troops, and also figure out how combat works.
Yeah.
And this is why her religion is denouncing Venice.
Loads of money.
How many times in Turncast, in particular, I thought of that as like, why don't you go research that? How far behind are you? I don't want to talk about it.
Hey, not to sound uncultured, but what are all the rectangles you keep poking?
They're phones! How far behind are you? Go and research education.
I can't yet.
I think the best hidden joke is that Egypt was building a bunch of wonders in everyone's faces, but also Egypt was on his private continent. So why is Egypt on his private continent building the Great Wall? Just a troll, I guess.
Yeah. Can't land on them easy, I guess, and move your units.
I'm building a terracotta army. Should double my military forces, so it'll be pretty expensive, but I think I can afford it.
Oh, I started one of those, too.
I denounce you.
Oh, no, it's fine. I can cancel production. Oh, no, it's done. Oh,
man. I was going to have 6 military units.
I think it would be fun to have at least one warmonger in this discussion, too. Like,
we need Monty in there just to go...
Yeah, Monty or Napoleon or... Yeah.
No, Shaka.
Oh, Shaka, yeah.
And then slowly but surely the voices disappear. Like, what? But they were never here. Those were our accounts.
I was impressed by the projection they showed, a hologram of cities getting bombed.
Catherine,
you guys do what you want. I'm going to space.
Call in today.
In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Record dates assorted. 2015. Deal with Gandhi Clips, copyright White Lightning.
Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth Sound Clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.